Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, for two decades, Catskill Mountain Keeper has been on the front lines of some of New York's biggest environmental battles, from stopping fracking to pushing back against the proposed Route 17 highway expansion. Now, the organization is marking its 20th anniversary, and we'll have an interview to celebrate. If you're a night owl, it could affect more than just your mornings. A new study links late-night sleep habits to poorer heart health. We'll talk with a cardiologist about what it means and how to sleep smarter. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington, and the latest events and activities for everyone at the Western Sullivan Public Library. It's coming up after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israel's cabinet has approved a series of measures to strengthen Israeli control in the occupied West Bank and weaken the powers of the Palestinian Authority. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more from Tel Aviv.
The new measures would allow the Israeli government and settlers to more easily purchase real estate in the West Bank. A cabinet minister who announced the decision said this would ensure land reserves for future Jewish settlement. The new measures would also grant Israeli authorities power to carry out demolitions in Palestinian cities administered by the Palestinian Authority. And Israel would have more control over two ancient religious sites. Jordan and Egypt condemned the move and warned against Israeli annexation of territory where Palestinians want a sovereign state. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to meet President Trump on Wednesday at the White House to discuss Iran negotiations. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Funding for the Department of Homeland Security will run out at the end of the week unless Democrats and Republicans agree on new funding legislation. They're disputing new rules for federal immigration enforcement. Maryland Democratic Governor Wes Moore says the White House has rescinded his invitation to a dinner held with the National Governors Association. Moore serves as the vice chair of the association. He told CNN's State of the Union that the action is highly disrespectful.
It's not lost on me that I'm the only black governor in this country. And I find that to be, you know, particularly painful, considering the fact that the president is trying to exclude me from an organization that that not only all my peers have asked me to help to lead, but then also a place where I know I belong in.
The National Governors Association is scheduled to hold its winter meeting this month in Washington. The group's executive director released a statement. He laments the White House's decision to limit participation in events around the governor's meeting and to make the event partisan. Stocks opened mixed this morning and amid a battle over weight loss drugs. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped 170 points in early trading.
GLP-1 drugs can produce big gains and losses in the stock market, as well as patients' waistlines. Stock in Wegovy maker Novo Nordisk is up this morning after the mail-order pharmacy Hims & Hers Health withdrew a cheaper knockoff pill. Hims & Hers was facing pressure from the Food and Drug Administration, as well as a patent infringement lawsuit from Novo Nordisk. Stock in Hims & Hers is down. Kroger's tapping a former Walmart executive to be its new CEO. Greg Foran will take the reins nearly a year after Kroger's previous CEO stepped down following an investigation of his personal conduct. Tokyo's Nikkei average jumped nearly 4% overnight after Japan's governing party won a supermajority in weekend elections. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow's down 150 points. This is NPR. Minute Maid's frozen canned juice line is coming to an end after 80 years. The brand's parent company, Coca-Cola, is phasing out the once popular breakfast staple. From member station WABE, Marlon Hyde reports.
Many who grew up cracking open a can of Minute Maid frozen OJ and mixing the orange cylinder with water will soon say bye to the iconic drink. The Coca-Cola company, based in Atlanta and owner of Minute Maid, confirmed it will discontinue its frozen juice concentrates in the U.S. and Canada by April to focus on fresh juices that the company says customers now desire. Introduced in 1946, the frozen drink will remain available while supplies last. According to recent data, sales have declined for frozen beverages. Coke has been leaning on its zero sugar and premium drinks in recent months as it says consumer demand is shifting. The company reports fiscal year 2025 fourth quarter earnings on February 10th. For NPR News, I'm Marlon Hyde in Atlanta.
A Seattle official says the city will hold a victory parade Wednesday for the Seattle Seahawks. They beat the New England Patriots last night 29-13 to win Super Bowl 60. The big draw for the halftime show was Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny. But at the same time, the conservative group Turning Point USA offered competing halftime entertainment. It was headlined by Kid Rock and several country musicians. Some conservatives had lashed out at the NFL for selecting Bad Bunny, who performs in Spanish. Some wrongly labeled him a foreigner. Puerto Ricans are Americans. President Trump also insulted Bad Bunny's performance. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. February is American Heart Month, and a new study published in the Journal of the American Heart Association is raising fresh concerns about how our sleep schedules affect heart health. Researchers found that so-called night owls, people who naturally stay up late, tend to have poorer overall cardiovascular health than early risers. Joining us now is Dr. Lindsay Matrani, a cardiologist with Optum Care Mount Medical, to help us understand what the study finds and why sleep is so important for the heart. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Can you explain more about those key findings of that Journal of the American Heart Association study on night owls and cardiovascular health and why people should care about this link between sleep patterns and heart health?
Absolutely. So sleep is crucial for cardiovascular health. There is a bidirectional relationship, meaning it goes both ways. In other words, sleep is really important for preventing key factors that are related to cardiac health, including elevated blood pressure, weight, and feeling well. And the other side of this, cardiovascular treatment can also affect sleep.
What happens to the cardiovascular system when someone doesn't get enough sleep or has irregular sleep timing?
So let's start, before we go into how the cardiovascular system is affected, is what is good sleep? And then we'll go into how the cardiovascular system is affected.
Got it.
So the essential amount of sleep is around 7 to 9 hours a night. In fact, almost a third of adults are poor sleepers, meaning they're averaging less than 7 hours. And less than half of adults report having a good night's sleep. That said, it's not just about quantity of sleep, it's also about quality. So quality of sleep relates to how often someone's waking up, how difficult it is to fall asleep, and the consistency of good sleep night after night. Is it okay if I move on to how that affects the heart?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Sure. So when someone's not sleeping, essentially the blood pressure rises. Blood pressure is a critical risk factor for cardiac health. And if you think about it, when you're not sleeping, when you're tired, it's harder to make good dietary choices. You're less physically active. You're not in the mood to go to the gym. And even for me or for anyone I know, there's definitely mood disturbances or irritability when you don't have good sleep. It also relates directly to heart health. So there's an increased risk of atherosclerosis. That means there's plaque on the vessels. That's when we worry about things like heart attack.
Is it the timing of sleep, the duration, or quality that matters most for heart health, or is it all three?
It's all three together. When we think about heart health, we think about not just medications, but lifestyle. What can we do to help keep our heart healthy? So it's about the amount of sleep, 7 to 9 hours, and the quality of sleep. A lot of people tell me they get up frequently during the night, they have a difficult time falling asleep, or they have a difficult time staying asleep.
This study is focused on night owls, folks that are staying up late. Can those folks catch up, quote unquote, on sleep on weekends or by napping? Or does that irregularity itself just remain harmful to, you know, your heart and overall sleep?
The irregularity is definitely harmful. Having sleep consistency is a key marker for sleep success. But I do want to say there's a lot of things folks can do. So in terms of modifiable behaviors, what we can do, what we like to talk about is sleep hygiene. What does that mean? It means turning your phone off, even a couple hours before bed. Now, some people might find that impossible, so there are other things you can do, like dimming the light screen or using a filter app to prevent that blue light from keeping you awake. Another key factor is setting a good nighttime routine. Now, I have small kids, and we're very consistent about schedules, having a routine in terms of stories, but that applies to adults too. So that way you have a consistent schedule to get you on track. Some people turn their phone on Do Not Disturb, turn down the temperature, 68 to 70 degrees, and even turning off the TV to not have something waking them up in the middle of the night.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Lindsay Matrani, cardiologist with Optum Caremount Medical, about a new study that links late-night sleep habits to poorer heart health. Doctor, you mentioned what folks can do. What about if you're in a couple or a family where someone's a night owl and the other's a morning person? What are some practical strategies that can help both get healthier sleep?
That's always a challenge. So sometimes when we think about a night owl, we were just talking about practical tips. So turning the phone off, setting a nighttime routine, making a cool environment, creating blackout shades. So a lot of this has to do with our natural circadian rhythm, when we feel tired, when we're ready to sleep. And studies show you can actually move that up by a couple of hours by setting good routines. Now, I know people will struggle beyond that. So if you are facing insomnia, so that means staying up late, really not being able to get the rest you need, there is behavioral therapy to help you get the sleep needed for optimal cardiovascular health.
What about younger folks? How can families help children and teenagers develop good sleep habits that will benefit heart health long term?
Now, if I had that answer, I'd be doing quite well. So I have two little kids. I'll give you that example. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. So the same that we were saying for adults applies to kids. A lot of this has to do with the increase in technology, access to screens that keep people up and keep people going. Another big thing is caffeine, especially with teenagers. That might be a coffee, it might be a caffeinated drink, it might be a sports drink. Trying to limit that later in the afternoon, moving it up. All of that can be helpful.
Do your kids listen to you because you're a cardiologist?
Oh, no, absolutely not. They don't listen to me because I'm a cardiologist. We do the best we can. And a lot of what I do in clinic with patients is normalize how difficult it is. It's difficult for adults to get that optimal sleep. Like we said, less than half of adults are reporting good sleep. And it's difficult for adults to convince kids. We call it the witching hour. Mm-hmm. That's from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. People are struggling. And a lot of this affects women more than men. So women are, especially in the pregnancy stage, having difficult times staying asleep. Or even in that postpartum stage, they're having difficult times getting up frequently to help with the feeding. Or even the menopausal stage. So that's another challenge with hormones to stay asleep.
I think some listeners might take comfort in knowing that mom cardiologist struggles as much as they might as well with getting their kids to sleep. What are some common
Absolutely.
What are some common misconceptions about sleep and heart health that you hear from patients?
Well, it was only recently that the American Heart Association added sleep to what we call the Essential 8 lifestyle. So what does that mean? A lot of times the misconception is you go to the doctor and we're just going to focus on medicine. What can we test? Can we do? But there is a big component of lifestyle for cardiovascular health. What do we mean by that? Let's start with eating. Eating healthy, moving your body, blood pressure, so that relates to the salt intake, stopping smoking, stopping foods high in cholesterol. I joke with patients, I don't mean to take away all the joy, but sometimes I try to focus. So lifestyle, the misconception is that it's just medicines that we use, but I think lifestyle is a key component that we can do to help patients get on track and not only live a longer life, but a healthier life as well.
When should a person consider seeing their healthcare provider about sleep problems, especially if they're worried about heart health?
Absolutely. So this has to do with patients who, before they develop disease and even after we develop disease. So we'll start with before we develop disease, and if we're having difficult sleeping, trying sleep hygiene is big. What do I mean by that? That's your phone, the TV, the screens, decreasing caffeine, setting a cool, dark environment. If you're still having trouble sleeping after that, you should let your doctor know or healthcare provider know. Now let's talk about diseases that can affect sleep. So a big one is called obstructive sleep apnea. What does that mean? That means not just snoring, but gasping for air and difficulty obtaining oxygen, which is crucial to your health during sleep. So it might not be the patient who notices, but oftentimes it's a bed partner. So someone sharing a bed that says, yes, they're gasping for air in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Obstructive sleep apnea has a very tight relationship with cardiovascular disease. And one more is actual depression and anxiety. So a lot of our patients suffer from psychiatric illness or from depression, anxiety. So that can definitely affect sleep and is treatable. So we ask you, come for help. Whether that's talk therapy, medicines, we're here to help.
Are there other warning signs? You mentioned sleep apnea, like snoring or even daytime fatigue that might point to sleep disorders that also affect heart health?
So when we're taking a sleep questionnaire, I like to focus on when is someone falling asleep? How long it takes for them to fall asleep? Do they wake up frequently? Why are they waking up? Sometimes patients, sometimes in men, will tell me, yes, I'm urinating 5 times a night. So there are things we can do to help with that. And then we also focus on the number of hours in total. So we'll work with you not just with medications, but lifestyle, everything together to get a good routine.
And what's the one thing you want folks to know before we go about the link between good sleep and heart health? What's the main message you want folks to take away?
I have two messages. One, so in studies I was reading, good sleep can improve your life expectancy up to several years. One study said almost 5 years in men and 2.5 years in women. And the second is it can improve your quality of life, improving your blood pressure, your mood, helping make good dietary choices. All of this is essential to good cardiovascular health.
That's Dr. Lindsay Matrani, cardiologist with Optum CareMount Medical. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And there's more about February and American Heart Month and ways to prevent cardiovascular disease at the American Heart Association, heart.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll celebrate 20 years of Catskill Mountain Keeper. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, with campuses in Harris and Calicoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Have you ever lied to a doctor about whether you smoke or how much you drink?
80% of people admit to not being forthcoming, to hiding something from their physicians, and it's super relatable, right? But it's also bananas.
The secrets we keep and how they affect us. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Much of what we know about our distant hominid ancestors has come from fossils found in South Africa, examined and identified largely by white researchers who took credit for the finds.
Black people were not viewed as equals. Their names were not warranted to be on a research articles.
The unlikely path of one of South Africa's few black paleontologists on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen to All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Fighting Route 17's highway expansion and fracking in New York are just a few of the biggest fights Catskill Mountain Keeper has championed over the years. This year, the environmental organization turns 20 years old. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar spoke with Taylor Jaffe, Catskill Mountain Keepers Program Manager on Farm and Country this past weekend, about their latest fights and what the next decade holds.
Well, maybe let's start with 2026 look aheads. I know it is your 20th anniversary at Catskill Mountain Keeper. Tell me about a little bit about what's in the works for the year.
Yeah, we've got a lot of exciting work going on, and we're 20 years old, so we've really got this down. Mountain Keeper is here because we care about the Catskill Park. We care about these communities. We are committed to protecting the park and, you know, deeply committed to the network of community members who are devoted to this work as well. This year, we've got everything going on from our Route 17 work to, pollinator plantings and enhancing, native plants for pollinators. We're fighting overdevelopment in this region. We've got stewards who are boots on the ground. We're working on farms and agricultural work. So we've got a whole host of programs going on and a whole bunch of advocacy also to support both local planning and local advocacy all the way up to sort of state and regional climate and other work.
You know, Taylor, it's so amazing to hear you talk about the work that you guys currently do and how that work has evolved over, the decades now. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the policy advocacy efforts that's in the works. Just a couple weeks ago in January, the New York Governor Kathy Hochul held her State of the State address. She talked about her plans for everything from childcare to immigration to nuclear energy. I'm curious, just from an environmental advocacy organization's perspective, what stuck out to you?
What stuck out to me is that we have, affordability is really the talk of the town. It's the buzzword for right now and for this legislative session. But when we talk about affordability, it is a real shame that we're not also talking about renewable energy. To bring nuclear into the conversation, that is the longest and most costly type of energy production, not to mention it brings, toxic pollutants to communities. So to have affordability be kind of the linchpin of this agenda without bringing renewables into the conversation is really a shame. And so Mountain Keeper, thankfully there are no nuclear sites being proposed in the Catskill region, but that they are being proposed across New York State. And so we, stand with our allies, especially Indigenous Nations, where a lot of these locations are being proposed, working to center the conversation on what we know does work, and that is solar. I think we are on track to meet the solar generation required by the Climate Act and on time and under budget. So, we really need to be talking about these local community solutions that we know work and that we know benefit folks and give us the energy we need without the pollutants.
And I know that you're encouraging folks to follow in the footsteps of, partner organizations like Environmental Advocates New York. There is, of course, still time from now in between when the budget gets passed. So there's a lot of negotiations happening. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you and some of the partners are asking for when it comes to the state budget?
Yeah, the biggest thing for us when we talk about the state budget is making sure that the Catskill Park has the funding that it needs to continue thriving. The Catskill Park is an area of 700,000 acres, which is about the size of Connecticut, and it intersects all of these different counties, towns, cities. It really takes a lot of funding to make sure that the Catskill Park is preserved, protected, and that these communities have the resources they need. And this year, the Environmental Protection Fund is where that budget line item comes from. And we are dedicated to, sort of retaining the funding levels for the Catskill and Adirondack Park. And what that looks like this year is that we want to maintain at least $425 million for the Environmental Protection Fund and begin working to increase that appropriation to $500 million annually. We want to maintain $10 million dedicated forest preserve funding under state land stewardship, maintain $90 million for DEC capital projects, And then, of course, maintain funding for visitor centers, educational stewards, research and monitoring. And this, of course, includes funding for Catskill Mountain Keepers Trail Steward Program. And we're really excited to be offering that program for its sixth year this coming season. When we're lobbying, we're certainly lobbying on behalf of other bills that will, you know, support the good ideas that come out and support renewables and all the other sort of environmental protections that we need. But when we're talking about the budget, Mountain Keeper is often working with our allies to talk about how do we make sure the Catskill Park has the funding that it needs.
Well, definitely looking forward to seeing those advocacy efforts that Mountain Keeper will continue to push forward. And I know that you'll continue to advocate for. That's so great to hear. One of the biggest campaigns, you know, Catskill Mountain Keeper has been leading is the Rethink Route 17 Alliance, focused on stopping all the plans for highway expansion and reinvesting those efforts into local communities. Tell me a little bit about where the campaign is right now.
Yeah, so this is a big year for the campaign. Sometime this summer is when we might expect a draft environmental impact statement on the project. So this would sort of be where the Department of Transportation says, hey, this is the alternative that we're really looking at. Here's what it says. Here are the possible environmental impacts that could come from this alternative. The real opportunity that we see right now, there have been announcements that there's a study coming for transit west of the Hudson, and that would encompass the Route 17 corridor, as well as quite a few of the counties in our Catskills, Mid-Hudson Valley region. And when we're talking about, you know, doing this great study for transit and taking a look at where are people traveling, how is commuting happening, what could be possible, that totally aligns with the alternate vision we see, which is investing in more transit, investing in more modes of transportation for our communities. Here we have this $1.4 billion project proposal. We want to see that record of decision, or, you know, that alternative continue to be delayed. This pause that we're in right now are really a delay on the project. We want that to continue until this transit study has happened, so that way its recommendations can influence the Route 17 project proposal. We think that's we're really excited about that study. And with $1.4 billion on the table, we want to make sure that the New York State Department of Transportation is using all the information available to make an informed decision that's going to really be positively impactful for our communities.
And just a note for listeners, the New York State Department of Transportation actually hit pause on, as Taylor pointed out, hit pause on this plan last fall, I believe, after significant community pushback, including from Catskill Mountain Keeper and the Alliance. You know, Taylor, we're kind of just getting started in 2026, and I am so excited to hear and also celebrate Catskill Mountain Keeper's 20th anniversary, as you mentioned. I'm curious, just for you, you've seen the organization over the years. Tell me a little bit about what Mountain Keeper means to you, especially in 2026.
Yeah, Mountain Keeper is so important to me. I grew up here in the Catskills, grew up farming with my family, and Mountain Keeper has been my local organization, you know, since it was founded in 2006. And I've watched this organization take on some incredible battles and win, including, you know, the fracking fight, the casino fight. Mountain Keeper really came from a background of being a watchdog for the Catskills and really getting everyone together to advocate at the local level for solutions. Mountain Keeper has then gone on to be really key in implementing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act and implementing other state level policies, continuing to advocate for the Catskill Park. And so we've got this really great history and identity of being a watchdog, but also starting to think bigger picture. How do we create the Catskills that we want to live in? How do we, you know, take this incredible community, all these incredible resources, make sure they're protected for future generations, but also, you know, how can we use this to our advantage? How can we make sure that we've got thriving communities, a bolstered economy, all of these great things? And so I'm really excited about the work we're doing at Mountain Keeper, because of course we continue that advocacy and protecting against those threats to the park and to our communities. But our work is also sort of really forward thinking. And so what do we want to see in the next 5, 10, 20 years? We want to see better transportation. We want to see more native plants that promote our pollinator health and farm and agricultural health. We want to see development that is aligned with our community needs, not overdevelopment and, you know, kind of crazy glamping proposals, but housing where it makes sense, affordable housing where it makes sense. And so we're in a really great place, I think, to have such a strong network of community support that it's a huge area that we're looking at, again, the size of Connecticut, but we have folks all across it who are deeply committed to this work and deeply committed to the Catskills. And so it's really a pleasure to be able to work with all of these folks and think through the Catskills that we want to see in the next 20 plus years moving forward.
I think that's such a beautiful way to encapsulate just how special and how much of an anchor this organization is to the region. Also exciting to hear the ways that the organization is thinking about the possibilities of the mission. When we talk about climate and the environment, we're also talking about, you know, housing, food justice, et cetera. Taylor, before we sign off, do you want to just let folks know how they can stay plugged into the work?
Absolutely. The best way to stay plugged into the work is to go to our main page at www.catskillmountainkeeper.org. And from there, you'll be able to learn more about us. You'll be able to join our emailing list and our work. There's a tab called Our Work, and you can find all of our programs there. And under each one, there are usually even places where you could do a deeper dive and, for example, sign up for the Route 17 newsletter or sign up to be included in our Catskills Native Plant and Seed Alliance. So we've got a lot of different things going on, but you're going to find all of that under our CatskillMountainKeeper.org website.
We've been chatting with Taylor Jaffe, Program Manager at Catskill Mountain Keeper. Taylor, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, how artificial intelligence will change healthcare.
This is the biggest experiment in the history of medicine.
And the experiment is well underway.
And if it works, it would be fundamentally groundbreaking to the way we think about practicing medicine.
Can AI save your life? That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Hello, Radio Catskill listeners. This is Andy Carlson, and I'm inviting you to join me Thursday nights for 2 hours of genre-bending exploration of the American rock songbook on Ramble Tamble. I'll be bringing you everything from John Prine to PJ Harvey, Steely Dan to Steppenwolf, and just about everything in between. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's Monday. Working 9 to 5. We get to check in with James B. Huntington, local author and economist, for some local economic perspective. James B., hello.
Tim, good morning, listeners.
Good morning to you. Well, if you watched the Super Bowl last night, you were bombarded with a lot of tax ads. It's that time of year. What common income type is the IRS going to be cracking down on this tax season?
They're looking a lot harder and in more detail on side hustles, gig work, jobs that people are doing. The time was recently when they were not really paying any attention to people who might have had a couple hundred a month or less than that, but now they are. So what the law is, you have to report any side income over $400 a year. Anything you might have could include ride-sharing apps, renting out part of your property, selling things online, running errands, offering creative freelance services, and those apps that allow people to do that. So you make sure that you track everything. And of course, when you do have side income, you can subtract expenses. That gets harder to do. If they discover it a few years from now, you may not be able to do that. You may be stuck for the entire amount, even when, for example, if you were driving from Uber and pulled in $2,000 a year and it really was worth $1,000 to you because you had repairs, maintenance, and mileage and such, then you might get stuck paying taxes on the whole $2,000. Years from now, documenting things could be a lot harder. So report those things. We better start reporting those things now and make sure we don't get in any trouble about it.
Earlier in the show, we talked to a cardiologist about night owls and heart health. What's keeping American CEOs up at night in 2026?
Well, it's interesting. The number one thing they're concerned about is uncertainty. You know, a remarkable piece of information for a long time that businesses want to know where earnings will be and such almost as much as they want earnings to be higher. So U.S. CEOs were interviewed, 43% said that was their top threat, to know what was going to be uncertain. That may have been precipitated by the tariffs, which seemed to change every day last year. But that's the biggest thing. Then a risk of a downturn and recession was close, but 35%. So globally, the downturn or recession was higher than uncertainty. But then they're not in our country where things keep changing. So that's what's bothering CEOs more than anything else.
And bothering a lot of people, I think. Let's talk jobs. What are going to be some of the in-demand jobs in this year?
Yes, we have a report shaping up here. As this is Monster's latest report, their job market outlook. It has come out for the 2026 version. And ones we are most looking for, they can see people looking most, are first in the category of skilled trades and technical services, specifically automotive technicians and mechanics, electronics technicians, and repair technicians. Just not enough of those people. You may have even picked up on that in car repair places that just don't have enough people working for them. Transportation, logistics, and essential services. What they have there especially is logistics specialists, over-the-road truck drivers. That's been a sure thing, or I won't say a sure thing, but it has been a problem area for a decade or two now. Just not enough people are willing to be away from home. If you are, you might think about it as a career, and you may be pleasantly surprised at finding out how much money you can make driving an 18-wheeler. Also, emergency medical technicians, EMTs, and delivering people. Then we have under technology and data, the big ones are quality assurance engineers and data engineers. And, of course, something that's always been a bullish area for employment, at least since I was in my 20s, is health, wellness, and community care. What people are wanted now are dentists, dietitians, massage therapists, and personal trainers. So if you have any kind of aptitude or experience or interest even in getting into one of those fields, think about it. They might be easier to get in than you think, and your time spent looking for a job may be a lot lower than others.
You always have some interesting phrases that you discover. This is a new one for me. What are peanut butter job raises? Are people getting paid in peanut butter?
Well, they could be. They might as well be in some of the cases here. But the idea is that raises are spread across everyone equally when companies are doing that. So people are getting the same across the board. Everyone is getting the same percentage. They're not merit-based. There is more of that. Now, there are real problems with this, but we have 44% of companies, wow, plan to use the peanut butter approach here. 3.5% is a typical number for raises people are getting in jobs all over this year. So if you got more than that, you should, even if you were a good performer, you should be happy or realize that it is above average. The thing with peanut butter raises, there are disadvantages, but it's the same kind of thing as we hear every now and then about companies getting rid of performance reviews. And it sounds at the very first blush as being good because people don't like them, employees don't like them, managers don't like to give them, and so on. But when you don't have them, all you're doing really is concealing management's viewpoint of the people they like and the people they want to promote, and people who will get better training opportunities and so on. They're still figuring those things out. They have to. They can't give the same thing if there are promotions out there. They can't promote everyone. There's no such thing as peanut butter promotions unless you have a whole new category or something of work. So I don't know. I don't think this thing will last, but it seems to me like laziness more than anything else. But look out for it. If you're hearing that at your company, if it turns out that everyone is getting the same percentage, and you know, I mean, if you're a good worker at a cubicle job, you'll know who the stinkers are. And if you find out that they're getting the same percentage raises as you, and maybe they're trying out peanut butter raises, so look out for them.
All right, another thing about dull jobs, juicy secrets of dull jobs. What's that all about?
Yeah, so I have a big fat article on these, and thought you might like the headline. This is actually in Yahoo News, and the headline reads, "People in dull jobs are spilling their industry's juiciest secrets, and I'm absolutely grabbing some popcorn." So I'll give you the first four today, the first four that are listed. One person says, "I work in the banking and payments industry. We have to monitor that payments are being used for their intended purposes. And many, many times it turns out that when they said they were selling hedgehog food, for example, they end up with selling pornography." So there's a lot of secret business purposes. Number two, garbage collectors. We know exactly who's getting divorced and who's going broke based on what they throw out. They don't talk about this kind of thing a lot, but they know. I mean, when they're picking up garbage, they can often see what's in there, and it reveals a lot. There's even an academic area called garbology that looks at what a society or a country or a zip code throws out and what it means. Number three, you'd be surprised at the drama that occurs in natural history museums between paleontologists, you know, people who track fossils, that sort of thing, people stealing others' data. People are so disorganized that it hurts an entire field season. And men being bad to younger women seems to be especially bad in the natural history museum area. Who would have thunk it? And the last one I'll give you here are vending at a farmer's market. I'll read the whole thing here for you. The customers all think it's so friendly and that the vendors get along. Try going to a market board meeting and you'll see a whole different story. We had a pair of farmers whose families had been arguing for decades, and they were constantly reporting each other for made-up infractions or trying to add more rules to make the other's farming life harder. Then there was the couple where she was 37 years younger than her husband. Everybody assumed he was her dad. He'd regularly blow up at customers who asked how his daughter was doing. Don't even get me started on the two bakeries that both sold sea salt chocolate chip cookies.
The drama.
Oh, there's some undersides of people's jobs. I had no idea these things were out there.
Well, I'm going to get my popcorn out right now as you tell us what the numbers are. Tell us what the stock and precious metal numbers, all of the prices from this morning, and how do they change?
Yes, well, we had, as he fumbles for his,
you got to put the popcorn down
here. Yes, I need some popcorn. I need to come up with these things. Okay, I know that gold, $49.95. Up 284 from last week. It's still a lot of problems in the world. Things which help gold, it looks like it's going back into the mid 5,000. Silver, $79.32 minus $2.58. Ratio is now 63-1, getting higher. But silver's coming back in general, so it seems like it's going back into the 80s or higher. How high? We'll see. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 50,116. That went up 1,218 for the week, which is almost exactly what it went up on Friday. So it's now at an all-time high. Not so good for NASDAQ, 23,031, down 431. Still a lot of trouble in the AI, Glenn. A lot of speculation, a lot of concern about bubbles, a lot of concern about too much money, just plain too much money. I saw $650 billion. Whew! All the companies in the country are going to be spending on AI this year, and a lot of people are getting scared, and caution is coming back to the stock prices. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $63.67 the barrel, up $1.68, still getting higher, and now we have concerns about Iran if our president decides to bomb or otherwise attack them. That's going to bring up oil higher, probably beyond 70. I'm not seeing a lot of pumps. Some things are creeping up. Some have gone up from the 260s to the 270s in some of the places I go. So it may be up a dime or so from its recent lows, but not a great deal. It's still fairly low. Bitcoin, $68,439, down just over 9,000. Yes, as I said last week, I asked if it was in trouble, and yes, it is in trouble. There are concerns it's anything like this, which has rather doubtful backing, like when you buy common stock, you're getting a share of the company you're buying, but with Bitcoin, when you buy one, you're not getting much of anything, and that may be coming home to roost as far as investment prices. British pound, 1.3605, down about a penny. The pound isn't great in particular. The dollar has generally been going down, but there's still profit-taking and still concerns going on. Euro, 1.1860, virtually unchanged at a high level, and the Japanese 100 yen coin is at 64 cents, down a penny, back to its sort of norm, still not doing very much. Overall, generally a strong week with NASDAQ and Bitcoin, the two main areas to be concerned about.
All right, keeping an eye on all of it is James B. Huntington, local economist and author. Thank you so much, James B.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners. Your mind, and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy.
Now, longtime Bard College president Leon Botstein is named in thousands of emails in the Epstein files. The batch of documents released last week returns over 2,500 results for Leon Botstein's name. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC's Dave Lucas spoke with Ilya Skara, Lower Hudson Valley Bureau Chief, for more.
So what do we know about President Botstein being named in the files?
So in 2005, Palm Beach police began investigating if Epstein had molested a 14-year-old girl. In 2008, Jeffrey Epstein pleaded guilty to Florida state charges of soliciting prostitution from someone under 18 and was sentenced to 18 months in jail. He was also a registered sex offender. 4 years later, Bard College president Leon Botstein took a trip with Jeffrey Epstein. That's according to emails between the two men's assistants. If you search the Justice Department's website, Leon Botstein returns over 2,500 results in the Epstein files, which includes repeats. On December 17, 2012, the executive assistant of Bard College emailed Epstein's office this. Leon Botstein should arrive at least 10 minutes before takeoff. The estimated time of arrival to St. Thomas is 2:30 p.m. We will have Leon picked up and taken to Jeffrey's Island. All will be taken care of.
So based on these emails, they took a trip to Epstein's Island?
Yes, based on these emails, yes. Botstein had told the press that he only communicated with Epstein in order to raise money for Bard College, and that if he knew what he knew now, he would not have accepted Epstein's money. Regarding the trip to St. Thomas, Botstein's assistant asked how he would be traveling and wrote, "Just out of curiosity, how will Leon get to Mr. Epstein's house? Will he be taken by boat, or will he take another flight to the island?" Their assistants coordinated the two men would arrive by boat and also share cell phone numbers.
So, Elias, do the files mention any other contact between Botstein and Epstein?
Yes. A year later, in 2013, Leon Botstein was to greet Epstein in Red Hook, the town where Bard College is located. Epstein was not alone on the helicopter, though. Someone named Jojo, maybe a housekeeper, was supposed to pick up, quote, all the girls, with the instructions, girls, bring your IDs with you. According to the schedule, Botstein greeted Epstein with two cars before they went to Botstein's home. Then they went to Botstein's opera talk and then the opera before an all-cast party at Botstein's home. It's unclear if Epstein went to the party.
And Elias, this was all purportedly to raise money for Bard College, correct? That's what is explained, I guess, in the email?
According to Botstein, yes. That's what Botstein has said over the years. They had numerous appointments over the years up until January 2018, the year before Epstein was found dead inside his New York jail cell. That 2018 email was the last email exchange that I found. They also exchanged words like saying, "I miss you," from Leon.
So, Elias, is there anything else that we should know about Leon Botstein based on these files? And also, you know, past reporting, what's been said about the Bard College president?
So he also allegedly helped Woody Allen's daughter get into Bard College, which he denies. But emails suggest Botstein did offer to help her get in after Jeffrey Epstein emailed him. In 2023, Botstein defended his past relationship with Epstein, saying, "We had no idea, the public record had no indication, that he was anything more than an ordinary, if you could say such a thing, sex offender who had been convicted and went to jail." Botstein did not respond to a couple of requests for comment from WAMC.
That's WAMC's Elias Guerra. Elias, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lucas.
And thank you for that report from the New York Public News Network. That is Lucas Willard, not Dave Lucas. Apologies for that. We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's what's happening at the Western Sullivan Public Library with Callison Stratton. We know her. This is Radio Chatsko.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear Henry Mancini from the TV show Mr. Lucky. Also, George Shearing plays, Nat King Cole sings, plus the sound of 50s exotica music. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And Saturdays at 7, you can hear Callison Stratton on Liberation Station here on Radio Catskill. But she has a full-time job outside of bringing you really great music on Saturdays. She's the children's coordinator at the Western Sullivan Public Libraries. And Callison is here to tell us about what's going on. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So you have this really cool new elementary school program. And what's cool about it is it's led by high school students. Tell us more about this.
Yeah. So back in the fall, we opened up proposals for a teen mini grant. So our winning proposal was the Equation and Expression Program by sophomore Christopher Lee and junior Mary Chellis of Sullivan West proposed this wonderful program, which is an academic enrichment program that's going to be meeting in 5-week sessions. We're going to break it up for different grades, but we thought it would be a really wonderful program to offer a peer-led, teen-led, like learning games where they'll be learning about math and literacy through this sort of collaborative, fun environment. And it's going to be meeting on Wednesdays at the Jeffersonville Library. So our it'll be in 5-week sessions, and our grade 2 to 3 session will start February 25th. Then grades 4 to 5 will start April 8th. And for grade 6, which we'll be doing a middle school prep course, will start May 20th. And they'll all be in 5-week sessions.
And you need folks to register in advance?
Yes. And we are asking folks to register for all 5 sessions. If they're unable to make it, we'll have opportunities for them to make up activities. But really, it's not about getting grades or anything like that. It's about community skill building, social emotional learning, developing those skills that are going to help them just go a little bit further in their academic career. And it will be something that's led by students who've been through it all. Already,
yeah.
You know, our teens who are now in the high school stage, and we're very excited about this program. When we saw their proposal, we were just so proud of it, and we said we have to help facilitate this.
What a great thing to have there too.
Yeah.
The library has more than you ever imagined. Let's talk more also about something that we're all kind of focused on: getting outside when we can go outside. Hopefully soon.
Can't wait. So yeah, we're getting
And you've got a garden club. You're getting ready for that.
Yes, we're very excited for our garden club. It's our Junior Master Gardeners program that meets at the Narrowsburg branch. And so we have a plot in the Tustin Community Heritage Garden. And so our new garden club session is going to be starting March 7th. Kids who've participated in the past are welcome to come back. We'll have plenty more new things for them to learn. And if your kid is age 6 and up, you're welcome to come join us as well. So it's a very community-based, all-ages program. We're also encouraging local gardeners, people who love getting their hands dirty and love working with kids, are welcome to come volunteer. If you have something particularly special, a talent that you'd like to share that relates to gardening, composting, anything like that, we would love to hear from you. You can reach out to me directly at wspl.children@gmail.com, and I can get back to you if you're interested in volunteering or if you're interested in hearing more about the program.
And there's more about all of the programs and all of the great things that the libraries offer at wsplonline.org.
Yes, indeed. And you can also, if you go there, you can sign up for our mailing list, and you can find out more about our youth programs all on our website.
Support the libraries. Thank you, Callison Stratton.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter at our website, wjffradio.org. It's in your inbox every Friday. Just go click, sign up. It's easy. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
The brain is the organ that makes us who we are. It's our conduit between reality and thought, but somehow we've only scratched the surface in understanding how the brain actually works.
Are there things that we might not be able to think? Possible true scientific theories we might not be able to understand ever?
It's part one of our special exploration, Brain Waves. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, not as cold today with more sun than clouds, a high of 25. Cloudy tonight, low of 10. It won't be as harsh as it has been for the rest of this week. We're looking at highs in the 30s. Tomorrow, 31. Might see a little bit of snow and ice in the afternoon to the evening. 32 for the high on Wednesday, 25 Thursday. On Point is coming up next. It's 11 o'clock.